Okay, so since this is the first Chabura, we're going to spend a little bit of time on an overview of Yevamos as a whole, the Masechta as a whole, and more specifically the mitzvah of Yibum. And hopefully after this first Chabura, maybe one more after that, we'll be able to follow along precisely or more or less with the pace of the Kollel learning and be able to have the Chaburas kind of correspond to the Dapim that you're on so that A, the prep is a little bit easier, but also so that it fills in and adds some of the dimensions to the learning. What I want to try to do today is discuss Maseches Yevamos as a whole and Yanei Yibum and Chalitza specifically, and really the issue of Yibum and Chalitza in Tanakh and its placement in Chazal as well. So let's just go through. The first couple things I want to just do an overview are really what are the main questions we want to ask. Because it's Chabura, I feel like I need to do more like frontal teaching than I would normally do. Normally I would be more interactive, but it's once a week, and I kind of feel like it might be better to unload as much information and analysis as possible. But definitely if you have any questions or want to add anything, that's great. But normally I would open it up for discussion or what you think is the most important questions to be asking about Yevamos. But maybe we'll do some more of that kind of stuff during Seder time and stick to pumping the info during the Chaburas. So if we were to make a list of some of the essential questions to ask before we even begin looking at the psukim themselves and certainly at the Masechta itself, we would want to know what the purpose or goal and the exact nature of Yibum is. Okay, I think that's the essential question to try to figure out what it is that the Parsha of Yibum is trying to convey to us is the purpose or goal of Yibum. Exactly what its nature is. Then, of course, there are questions which relate to that, and that is, what's the relationship between Yibum and the alternative institution in a case of a man who dies childless? What's the relationship between Yibum and Chalitza? Now, that comes up right in the beginning of the parak, because Kol Ola Yibum Ola Chalitza is an important sugya in three or four different places in Yevamos. One of them is in the beginning of Hacholetz, and really that sugya hinges on the question of the relationship between Yibum and Chalitza. Are they kind of mirror images of one another? Can they have two different mechayvim? Do we count them as separate mitzvahs? Do we even count Yibum as a mitzvah? All those things we'll hopefully get to at some point. Rav Sajigon counts them as one mitzvah. Mitzvah Haseh Ayin Vav, which is interesting. Is that for technical reasons, like Rabbi Rochem Fishel Perlo says? You know, because you can only do one or the other, so he's only going to count one. Or is it for more fundamental reasons, namely that you know there's Zika, and you have to deal with Zika, and you have kind of two options in dealing with Zika, or perhaps other approaches to stating that there's kind of a fundamental link between Yibum and Chalitza as well. And just to round out kind of the main topics in the Parsha of the three main topics within the Parsha of Yibum Chalitza really are Yibum Chalitza and the nature of the Isser Yivam Lashuk and Zika. What exactly is this prohibition of the Yivama to others? What is it rooted in? And how does it relate to Yibum and Chalitza? And really that introduces the idea of Zika, and we'll be talking quite a bit about what exactly Zika is as we go along. Right, Rabbi Yochanan Fisher Perlo even asks, why do we count Isser Yevam Lashuk? Why does Rav Sajigon count Isser Yevam Lashuk once if he only counts one mitzvah for both Yibum and Chalitza? So that's another just... He counts a separate mitzvah as Isser Yevam Lashuk. And
Rambam counts two.
Everyone,
right. Rambam has three. Right.
And Sirachim has three.
Correct. The Urayim has none. Interestingly enough, he doesn't count. He has one, just the Isser Yevam Lashuk. He does not count yibam or chalitza, which
why
is interesting.
Why isn't the other approach?
He counts per revu. It might be within that. You know, we have to.
Does he mention that when he talks about revu?
I don't believe so, but I'll double check.
Why isn't the other approach of counting as one mitzvah to say that chalitza is really the yibam?
Right, it could be. Correct. It could be that too. Right. It's really just the total backup.
It's like the same focus by Gad.
Right. Right, and we'll get to that probably more when we do chalitza. You know, it's hard to not do all these things at once. The hard part about Masechet Yevamos is it's very hard to decide what order to do things. Everything is interconnected. Even, you know, I was talking with Effie, even Eidos Isha at the end of Masechta is very much connected, because the whole idea of needing Beis Din to declare that the man has died may tie into some of the various approaches that we have to Zika and Issur Yevam Lashuk. Meaning, when the husband dies, is it just natural that there's no longer any Ishus there, or do you require a Matir from Beit Din, you know, more similar to Get, and is that Matir missing in a case of Yibum, and perhaps you still have the vestige of the previous Ishus? So we're going to get into all those details as we go along, but I the more I think about it, the more I'm convinced that pretty much all of Yevamos, maybe some, you know, some of the Ha'arel and Alman El Kohen Gadol stuff is somewhat independent. You know, there are things here and there, but really a lot of the material connects with each other, and so it's hard to kind of just randomly decide when you're going to do stuff. That's why I'm going to focus on the Torah Shebichsav side of things today and raise just some of the bigger issues, and then we'll try to tackle as many of these big essential questions as we go along. The only thing comparable to this, and it's not at all comparable, is kind of like the first half of Bava Kamma is all interconnected. It's hard to like do Shor or, you know, Keren or Bor without jumping around in those first five Prakim of Bava Kamma. But this is more complicated and has even more interconnectivity than that.
With the Rasag, how does he formulate the history of the relationship?
So that's another question, which we won't get to deal with right now. It's definitely on the Shuk. The question is it also on the Yevama? And then there a third indicator that maybe there's also something incumbent on the brothers to make sure that she doesn't marry somebody else. So there are really three parties involved, potentially.
Meaning not necessarily by virtue of doing Yevama themselves, but otherwise preventing.
Right, let's say they haven't yet done Yibum, they haven't yet done Chalitza, they may violate the law of Issur Yevam Lashuk if they allow her, under their watch, allow her to get together with somebody else. Okay, so that's one series of questions. And we're going to spend some time today tracing some of the ideas about the purpose or nature of Yibum, especially as it relates to the issue of kind of dematan Torah and post matan Torah, we're going to spend some time on that. But then there are other really large questions which are also interconnected. Now, I'm not sure how much you have to say that it's muchrach. If you take this approach to this issue, then you have to take this approach to the next issue. They're somewhat independent questions, but they're all linked and influence one another, and perhaps we'll be able to sketch some kind of patterns as we go along. The question of the relationship between the institutions of Yibum, Chalitza, and Zika with conventional Ishus, and Kiddushin, Nisuin, and Gerushin. That is a huge, huge topic, and we're going to spend a lot of time on that. There's Mishnah in Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, which says, Kansa, right, once he marries her, Reiki Ishto L'chol Davar. There's Gemara in Lamed Tes, which defines exactly what that means, and has a very important Havamina Maskan about that. But I figure we'll do that when we get up to that in a couple of weeks, rather than, what's the pay supposed to be, like a daf a week?
It comes out to a daf and a half a week.
Okay, so maybe we'll do it even next week. Okay.
It's more stuff.
Okay.
It's more dafic.
Okay. So we'll it's like 45, 50 as opposed to 40.
It's closer to
50 right. For the year.
Okay, that's a lot.
It's like 12 buys.
Okay. So we'll try to correspond, like I said before. That is a huge question. And really the range of possibilities, just to sketch them out a little bit, is to say that really these institutions are very, very similar, and any difference is for very minor technical reasons. You know that, yes, she's been married to somebody else before, but once she marries this second brother, then it's kind of regular yishus, and you know, don't go all crazy or anything. Alternatively, you can suggest that Yibum is completely different. There's a completely different Maisa, and there's a completely different Chalos, and everything about Yibum is different. I think what we're going to see, at least in the Rambam and some other sources, is that the differences between Yibum and conventional Ishus are significant, but they're not two totally different institutions, and the unique elements of, or the elements of Yibum that are emphasized actually highlight or underscore some elements of regular Ishus that otherwise we wouldn't necessarily pick up upon. Mashal Mahadavar Dome, there's a drasha about Lo Tignovu Almanas L'Megad or Almanas L'Shalim Dal V'Hei. The Rambam mentions in Sefer HaMitzvos, when he's defining the Isser of Lo Signovu, of not stealing, he mentions Lo Signovu Almanas L'Megad, you shouldn't steal from somebody even when you're just doing it to kind of as a joke, or don't, let's say I know that Noam needs a few bucks and I want to take I figure out a great way to give him money. He's too proud, he's not going to let me give him $50, so I have this brilliant idea. I'm going to steal a sheep from him, and if I steal a sheep from him and then I get found with the sheep, and if I slaughter that sheep, then I'll have to pay Dalit with the sheep, right? So again, that's usser. Even though, you know, you could say that's a wonderful thing to do, I'm trying to give him money, that's also usser. So the Rambam quotes that isser in his definition of Lo Signovu, and it's very strange because it's not even clear that that's midoraisa usser, number one. And number two, the Rambam himself in Mishnah Torah isn't so clear about whether it's usser midoraisa, but nevertheless the Rambam puts that in his Minyan Mitzvos. And what I always thought was kind of the explanation for that is that Lo Signovu Almanas L'Megad highlights what's unique about Geneva, even though it's not classic Geneva. Why is it not classic Geneva? Because there's no Hefsid Mamo. If anything, you're giving the guy money back. But what it highlights is that a Maisa Geneva, the act itself of stealing, even if it's not for the purpose of keeping it and causing a loss to another, is itself the primary Mechayev of Geneva. So similarly here, there are aspects of conventional marriage which are illuminated through Yibum that perhaps we would overlook or not necessarily zero in on without Yibum. One of those ideas is certainly the idea of pru revu and procreation. We'll talk a little bit about that. And I think there's another aspect or element of Ishus or family life in general that Yibum helps illuminate, which we'll come back to. Okay. Not at all. I just was trying to get some air in here. But I'm schwitzing anyway, so it's fine. Just other good examples, if you are interested. Yibum is not the only case. It's like the most significant model of kind of atypical or unconventional Ishus. There are a couple of other models. Right? We read about one last week. Right. Ishus Vas Toar is funky Ishus. Is she Jewish? Is she not Jewish? They're Das. Is there not Das? One other good example.
Onus.
What? Onus. So Onus and Mefat and Moti Shemra are slightly different because of the the elimination of the possibility of divorce. So Yeyud, Amma Ivria. When an Amma Ivria goes from being an Amma to being a wife, that's called Yeyud. That also may have what? Okay. You're saying when the Mians just okay, correct. Right. We'll talk about some comparisons and contrasts along the way. Okay. Another major issue, which we're not going to talk about pretty much at all because it's really first parak stuff, is the question of the relationship between the Isser Eishes Ach and the mitzvah of Yibum, and kind of what it is about the Isser Eishes Ach, if anything, that allows for Yibum. And that gets into the Hutra Dehuya or B'makom Yibum Lo Nemra discussion. You can say that even more fundamentally, that there's something special about the relationship with the brother, that it's not just B'makom Yibum Lo Nemra, but that there's kind of even a Kiyum in the Erva if you go ahead and perform Yibum. So that's a lot of first parak stuff. The first parak doesn't seem like the obvious place to start Yevamos, but I think because, again, those issues of the relationship between Mitzvah Yibum and Isser Eish HaSach illuminates other stuff, it's actually an interesting starting point, and the Tzaros and the other Arayos and the Tzaros is also very important. Okay, and what we're going to be talking about mostly today is the question about the relationship between the mitzvah of Yibum and the proto-Yibums, or the Yibum precursors that we find in Tanakh. And we're going to try to analyze whether or not these other cases of kind of Yibum or funky Yibum or Geula, whatever we want to call it, are completely different dinim than the Torah's mitzvah of Yibum, or whether they're completely the same, or perhaps whether the pre-Matan Torah version of Yibum, or even the post-Matan Torah version of Yibum, what's known as Geula and Sefer Rus, is one element of, again, kind of an element that allows us to highlight what's unique about Yibum. Like, Yibum may very well be kind of the civilizing of, or formalizing of, the pre-Matan Torah conception of what to do in these circumstances. So there may be more Ishus elements added in to the mitzvahs Yibum once we have Matan Torah in Sefer Dvarim, which may not have existed beforehand, and try to figure out exactly what that does to our understanding of these various cases throughout Tanakh. Yeah.
Are you talking about, like, how the Rambam describes korbanos, like centralizing, like minimizing and localizing it to one place, like cutting out?
Yeah. I mean, that's a mushal kind of thing, right? Or, you know, kind of taking this idea that certainly seems to exist before Matan Torah and making adjustments or enhancements to it to kind of put it more in line with institutions that came along with Matan Torah. Like, especially if you take the Rambam's beginning of Hilchos Ishus, where he says, Kodem Matan Torah, there wasn't the formal kiddush or kedusha aspects. Right, it's kind of, you know, you see the guy, you get together, and you live under one roof together. Then you're able to be considered husband and wife, and the transformation of Matan Torah is the Kiddushin element, it's the Kinyan element, it's the Eidus element, etc. So with that, there's also alterations, enhancements of Yibum, which may generate Kulas and Chumras. Kulas in the sense that, we'll talk about it, you know, restrictions in the sense that it may now only be the brother is allowed to do it. The brother-in-law is allowed to do it. But we'll figure it out. That doesn't help out with Boaz and Rus, but we'll figure it out. Anything else, Noel? Okay, so those are the major questions. I kind of want to do, the first thing I want to do is do a careful reading of the first couple of psukim in Dvarim, in the Parshas Ki Tse, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the other places in Tanakh where this we have kind of these ideas manifest and go from there. Okay, so if we take a look at the psukim themselves, the first thing that we should note that I didn't give to you to kind of explicitly note is that the parsha of Yibum and Chalitza is not side by side with the parsha of Ishus. Right, the parsha of Ishus of Kiddushin and Gerushin in the Torah is a parak earlier. It's in Parak Chavdalet of Sefer Dvarim. That parsha in and of itself is fascinating. That parsha doesn't begin with doesn't really seem to focus on Kiddushin and Gerushin themselves. They're kind of background material for the Isser Machzer Grusha, so it's all kind of building up to that.
Just in the Gemara Kiddushin,
Kiddushin's
meeting, so one of the things that was Rabbi Hartzler was pointing out that he said in his class, which everybody agrees about, is that one of the emphasis that a lot of people are teaching in the class is, if you ask, you know, where's Tefillin, I'll show you the parsha of the Torah. So there's no parsha of the Torah for Kiddushin.
Right.
Never anywhere where it's
well, I would say, I would be more precise. I think there is a pasuk in the Torah, or a word in the Torah, which we say is referring to Kiddushin, but that's certainly not the point of the parsha.
It's not a topic like
right.
Is.
And what's weird is it everything builds up to this Isser Machzer Grusha, so which, relatively speaking, is not that big a deal. It's a lav, you know. It's the Elizabeth Taylor Isser. Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, you're holding? All right? They were married once, and then they got divorced, and then they got married again. They married other people in the interim. Right. So we'll hopefully have a chance. The truth is the Sugya Master Grushaso is a Sugya Nivomos on Yud Aleph and Beis. Yud Aleph and Beis, Yud Aleph and Beis. Because there's a whole discussion of Tsaras Master Grushaso, which then gets into a discussion of Master Grushaso. Master Grushaso, I think, just Derech Agav. Did you learn Gittin with Yom?
Yeah.
All right, so Tsaras Machzer Grushaso really, Isser Machzer Grushaso also is something that I think highlights kind of the formalized aspects of Ishus. One of the interesting things about Isser Machzer Grushaso, if a woman has an affair with somebody after she divorces her husband, but doesn't have Kiddushin with him, just has an affair, just not an affair, has a fling. It's not an affair, she's not marriage. She has an encounter with a man, she can still go back to her husband. It's only if she has the process of Kiddushin where she's not permitted. That's a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi ben Kiper and the Rabbanon. We possibly like the Rabbanon. It's dafka only if she has Isha. So again, I think Isser Machzer Grushaso kind of highlights the formalizing chaluyos aspects of Ishas, which interestingly enough may not be as prominent when it comes to Yibum. Either way, the parsha of Yibum and Chalitza.
That's why it's the parsha of Kiddushin.
Correct.
Involved in that.
Correct. Right. It all builds up to the Machzer Grushaso, Lo Savi Toeva. It's really striking, kind of. Lo Yuchal Ba'ala Rishon Asher Shechal Ashub Lekaftali Yosel Lisha Acharei Asher Hu Tama Ki Toeva Hi Lufnei Hashem Lo Sachti Asa Aretz Asher Hashem Lo Kafen Osein Lecha Nachala.
It's like the antidote to the Kedusha.
Correct. Exactly, and playing fast and loose with the institution of Kiddushin and Gerushin is kind of like undermining the whole point of Kiddushin and Gerushin, which is to kind of elevate and enhance the marriage. And if you go ahead and just kind of remarry after you're married to somebody else and treat it, you're treating marriage post-Matan Torah with the institutions that are there to try to create Kedusha and preserve Kedusha, you're treating them the same way as if it was called the Matan Torah. So I think that's the significance of that. Either way, be that as it may, the Parsha of Yibum Chalitza is located a parak later and is separate and apart. The question again is, going back to that earlier question, does that demonstrate that Yibum Chalitza is a totally different parsha, has nothing to do with the Ishus, or is it set apart and not side by side because, you know, we do want to highlight some of the distinctive elements here that exist, which again will further illuminate what's going on with Yibum Chalitza. So let's take a look at the first couple of pesukim. Ki yeshvu achim yachdav umeis achad mehem uvein ein lo. It's a jam-packed pasuk. Each one of these pasukim is filled with drushos and filled with potential insight. So, in terms of the drushos, ki yeshu achim yachdav, the Medrash Halacha and later on the Mishnayos point out, and Rashi Ala Torah has these, that the ki yeshu achim yachdav teaches us two different dinim. One is Eishes Ha'ach Shelo Haya Ba'olamo is exempted from Yibum. There's no Yibum in the case of a brother who was born post the death of, right? If the mother of the brother who dies is pregnant and then gives birth to a brother, that brother does not perform Yibum, is not eligible to perform Yibum. And also the din of Achim Mina'av is learned that from Kieshvu Achim Yachdav. Yachdav is the Eish Zachar Shlo Yivam Lomo, and the Achim is what teaches us what their Doresh for Achim Mina'av as opposed to Achim Mina'im. So these could just be technical drashos, and Kieshvu Achim Yachdav is, you know, like a nice way of allowing us to be marbid drashos, which I think the Meshech Chachma seems to say on the Pesukim. But perhaps, and again, this is going to be kind of the underlying theory of the opening shir, perhaps even within Ki Yeshu Achim Yachdav, and this, and these drashos of Achim and Av and Eish Tzach Shel Oyev Olamo, the Torah is actually indicating a more fundamental element of Yibum, if not the element of Yibum, which is that Yibum has to do with brothers and one family member kind of taking care of another family member, taking care of the wife of a dead family member. And it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be about Lahakim Shein Lahakim. It may not even be about, that might be a separate idea, about preserving his line by having a child with the former wife of the brother. It may be that just taking care of the wife and making sure that she is taken care of is a significant element that's kind of chiyuv or chov mishpacha, and that part of the nature of Yibum is that selfless act of one brother taking care of the needs of another brother. There is a lot of evidence to back this up. I meant to photocopy this. This Ronzweig gave out to his shir a Sefer Habatim, which is someone who mostly wrote commentary on the Rambam, but he has, on the Minyan Mitzvos of the Rambam, he has a discussion of the purpose of Yibum, and that's what he suggests is the whole idea of Yibum, is this idea of one brother helping out another brother. I'll send you the the PDF of it later on. It also is indicated later on in the Pasuk when it says, Lo siye eishes hames hachutza li'ishzar. That phrasing of hachutza li'ishzar almost indicates that we want to keep her in the fold and not to someone who is foreign. The Rambam, his Koteret, seems to also indicate this, that when he talks in Hilchos Yibam about Rishus Hayavam and the household having this element, though I'm not so sure about that. And then there's also the other dinim which come up a little bit later on in the Pesukim, which we'll talk a little bit about, the mitzvah begadol liyabim. Why is it that there's this notion of the oldest brother should be the first one to do it? And the connections between Nachala, Bechor, and mitzvah begadol liyabim all suggest that there's a familial chiyuv mishpachti at play, and that's an essential element of what Yibum is about. And I think that also fundamentally can explain the din of Eishes Ach Shel Oyev Olamo. If that brother was not around with the brother who died, then you can't generate that same kind of chiyuv mishpacha. You could say that very technically, listen, the chiyuv Yibum kicks in the second the brother dies. If there's no brother there, then there's no chiyuv, even if we can anticipate that the brother's going to be there. You can say that very...
If it were allowed, we wouldn't necessarily have said that. I mean, if it were allowed for the son who wasn't born to be to marry this woman, we wouldn't have jumped on that and said, how can that be?
Right.
He's part of the family.
Right.
But how does mitzvah begadol play into that? Because it's that's...
The notion of the gadol being the family head. There is the pishnayim piece, right, and the behor piece. There's a lot of Bechor and Gadol, Mitzvah B'Gadol Yamin connections. There's a lot of connections between Yerusha and Nachla, even in Chalita. We'll talk about when we get to Chalita, the notion of Chalita being a Kenyan, and maybe Yerusha kicking in with Chalita. There is a lot of indications that the issues of Yibum and issues of Yerusha and Nachla are very interconnected.
And the Joshua themselves, the name Lo.
Right.
I love from Bava Basra.
Correct. That parak in Bava Basra, which deals with the laws of Bechor, it asks questions, and that's also Achim Mina'av Dafka, because Mishpachas Av Kari Mishpachto. Achim and Av is an essential requirement when it comes to Yerusha. And again, having that spill over here may make sense, that Yerusha and Yibum are not necessarily distinct, separate institutions, that there's a lot of overlap because the whole idea of Yibum and the ideas of Yerusha are interconnected or one and the same.
That's like Rabbeinu Bachya, it sounds like.
Right.
The idea is keeping the money in the family.
Right. The next thing in my phenomenal
sheet
was that Rabbeinu Bachya connects Ki Yeshu Machim Yachdav with Lo Siyayish Tzmein Sachutz Lizhar and the ideas of Yerusha. Exactly. Right, and he also suggests that the Yavim Yavamin themselves are have to make sure that she doesn't go and marry somebody else. That Lo Siyayish Tzmein Sachutz Lizhar, if you were to halachasize that Rabbeinu Bachya, he would definitely say that they violate it if she marries,
right,
if she goes in and marries somebody else. Good. So, taking that kind of kernel of the opening words of the Psukim, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachdav, and the Lo Siyayish Tzmein Sachutz Lizhar, just to then focus on Lo Siyayish Tzmein Sachutz Lizhar. We talked about the significance of Hachutz Lizhar, and we also mentioned just kind of the three different parties that are involved there, and we mentioned Rabbeinu Bachya tying them all together. How you violate the Isser of Isser Yavam Lashuk and the nature of that Isser is a huge topic, which we will hopefully get to. Is there Mamzerus created? It's just a lav, but it may have some arayos, erva elements to it. That's a big machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, in three or four different places. Is there Arkidushin Tosin? Is there Mamzerus? Is she Asura Liyavam if she's Mizani? Yavama Shizinsa, so all those kind of test out the relationship between Zika / Isser Yavam Lashuk and the Isser Ashes Ish, and that kind of comparison. The Rambam has a very interesting psak that it's considered a rias, even though he clearly thinks it's only a lav, and the question is, why is that? So the nature of the Isser Yavam Lashuk is a huge issue.
So that question is dafka about Zinta, as opposed to formal kiddushin?
If she has kiddushin with somebody else.
To everyone,
No, that's also machlokas, whether kiddushin is tosin. That's the first machlokas. It's Gemara and Sadi Beis, Rav and Shmuel have machlokas, whether kiddushin tosin be shomeris yavam. So those are, let's go over the nafkaminas. Are kiddushin tosin? Would the vlad be a mamzer?
Right.
And yavama shizinsa. Is she Asura now to the Yibman? So those three issues, Rav and Shmuel debate, there's also Rav Hamnun on that, and those three issues really illuminate the question of, do we treat the Isser Yavam Lashuk as a kind of quasi-erva? Okay? Again, I don't love leaving it quantitatively at that, like just say, okay, she's a 50% erva, right? We would want to kind of qualitatively explain that, and we're gonna try to get to it, right? Some of the usual tricks of the lumdus trade are to either be mechalik between her mitzida and mitzad the yavam. Like mitzad the yavam, there's no real ishas. He doesn't really have ishas with her. But maybe she's considered partially as an ishas ish still, maybe from the previous marriage, or even, you know, because she's kuka. Or we may have to say that the whole notion of Zika is a kind of unique institution which generates kind of this quasi-status. But it wouldn't be 50%. It would have certain elements of Isha's but not others, or maybe that's Gufa, the debate between Rav and Shmuel throughout Shas. Good. Yavama Yavo Alau Ulekachalo Liisha V'yima. Okay, so this second half of the first pasuk is really what we're going to talk about when we get to that Mishnah, Kantareki Shalachodavar. How do you read this? You know, the fact we call him Yavama, first of all, is very important. So that would seem to indicate that we're right. Even in the previous phrase, we called her Ashes Hames. which you could say is either technical, or you could say that that's really fundamental, that Zika is a function of the Ishus, a vestige of Ishus with the old guy. Right? We could have just said Losia Isha Hachutz Liyishar. The fact that it says Losia Isha Hameis Hachutz Liyishar, if you want to read that, yes, that is who she is. She is the wife of the dead guy, but perhaps we're still referring to her as the wife of the dead guy because that's fundamentally what the connection, the primary connection is.
It also presupposes a status as opposed to requiring her to do a certain action,
right,
for him to do a certain action.
Right, so that's another question. Meaning, maybe Zika is just a function of them having not yet done Yibum and Chalitza, or Chalitza, but not an independent, you know, status on its own. Right? There may be opinions that say, like, Ein Zika. The Gemara in Kiddushin in the beginning says, Shekein Skukav Omedes, and some of the Rishonim, the Rama, who's brought down in the Tosa Rush there, the Yad Rama, says that, the reason why she's Skukav Omedes is Mishum Sheim Odo Chaltzu. Like, he doesn't say, oh, because there's real Ishas there. He says it's just a function of the fact that they haven't yet done that. So that's like a way of kind of saying, no, there really is no connection. There really is no Ishus here with the new brother, with the old brother. It's just a function of them having not yet resolved or performed the mitzvah that they're supposed to do, either Yibum or Chalitza. So, but again, that's already taken us far afield, yeah.
Why are we saying that Ishus is talking about like the Zika with her old husband? Maybe it just has to do with the purpose of what she's doing. She's doing it for her brother.
Correct. For her first husband.
For her first husband.
Correct. You could just say that's what we call her.
I mean, not that it's just that's what she is. She is. And it's also not like technical halakhically. It's like the purpose.
Okay. But I'm saying, once you're saying it's the purpose, then you might as well say that halakhically the Zika that still exists function of her first marriage as opposed to the new guy. It would be odd to say that the purpose of this is to kind of perpetuate her first husband, but the marriage with the first husband, it's totally over halachically, and a new creation called Zika, which is a quasi-ishus with the new brother, has been created. You could say that.
I don't even find that odd.
But once you're saying that we're... The whole purpose of Yibam is to perpetuate her original marriage with the husband, then just conceptually it makes more sense. I don't think you have to say it. It makes more sense to say that first marriage is still somewhat alive, and that's what carries over. And we would call her Eshet Hamet, not just as a way of describing her, not just as a way of saying this is the purpose of this, but also as a way of saying that's halachically what's happening. But you don't have to. Lav dafka. But you hear what do you hear now what I'm saying?
The only thing is I don't, because I have a big chiluk in my mind between like halachos, like this is not ishus ish. I'm just like in my head, right. It's not ishus ish. So if it's not ishus ish, that means that was separate and then a new thing. Like chivim come all along all the time.
Right. There is a havamina in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which we're going to get to, that a regular woman whose husband dies,
stam itadabal,
there would still be an Isra Aseh for her to marry somebody else. So that already says, like, you know, without get, you don't have a formal closure. Right? Mises Abal just means that the guy's not there anymore, so maybe we can't talk about Ishus because the guy's not there, but there's been no matir. Like, a get is an actual active transaction which formally ends the relationship. Mita Tabal is kind of just an unraveling, and maybe there is still some element or some vestige hanging along. If you do say that, then it's much easier to say than the case that, no, in a regular case of an almana who has children, the marriage is kaput. The Ishus has completely unraveled because he's no longer here. But in the case of a Yavam, an Yibam situation, then you can't unravel all the Ishus. The Chiddush of Yibam is that the Ishus is not fully unraveled. You still have that original Ishus somewhat remaining. The Svarno Alator is the one who seems to advocate that the most, and he, you know, promotes this idea that you don't need Kiddushin when it comes to Yibam. You can jump right to the Bia because the Kiddushin of the first one is what carries over. So there, again, you can separate kind of the Tameh HaMitzvot from the halachic mechanism, But I you know, that's one area where I kind of like to put the kind of, you know, goal and nature of the halachic mechanism on one continuum. Okay. So, Yivam Yavol El Hachal Lishav Yima. This is a very kind of packed, jam-packed formulation. He's called the Yavama. So is he looking at her as his sister-in-law still? You know what? But Ulekacha Lo Lisha, okay. V'yibma.
So even what's the definition of Yavama?
We don't know. It sounds like it's not regular Ishus.
It sounds like we know what it is already. Like, you should know what it is.
Right.
It's kind of like a natural progression of things.
Well, Yibam, the word Yibam is used earlier on with Yehuda and Tamar. Exactly. Well, not with Yehuda and Tamar, with Onan and Tamar.
Right. That speaks to your idea of that this is just kind of the Torah formalizing something that was already in existence.
Right.
So we presuppose the idea of Yavama and that it already exists.
And what this formulation, I think, expresses nice, and like the Ishus is kind of sandwiched between the two Yibum words. Yivami Abo Aleha Ulakachal Lisha V'yibma is kind of like Ishus scrunched, you know, sandwiched in between the Yibum bookends.
But you could also just read it that Yivama is by virtue of what he's about to do, that renders him the Yavama.
Right, and we're left, and at the end of the day, we're left with Ishus.
Right.
Right.
You notice it's the opposite way. In the pasuk of confusion, it's ki kaf isha uva ola or uva
ola. Right.
Here it's kaf yivama yivah ola ula kecha.
Right. Right.
I'm not sure exactly what to make.
But it sounds like the ishus is more of a function.
Then
right. But it sounds like the ishus is more a function of the bia as opposed to kicha leading to that, for sure. Yeah. Correct. This the formulations here are extremely precise. So really we're going to have to look into, and this is going to be another chabur, the relationship between Ishus and Yibum, the Maisa Yibum, and comparing it with the Maisa Kiddushin V'Nitzuin, and also the Chalos Yibum. You know, when it's all said and done, do we say that they're a fully fledged married couple with all the laws of Ishus? What about Ksuba? What about Mitzvahs Ona? What about Pirkuna? We're going to see there are a number of halachic areas. Let's say they get divorced. Can they remarry each other before she marries somebody else? Meaning, let's say she doesn't, let's say the two of them.
Is there Masa Gushas?
Right, or do we say that now the Isra Ishazach comes
or
back?
They get an extra one.
Right.
Ah.
Does Ishazach come back? Because now that they're divorced and he's not marrying her as his brother's widow, he's marrying her as his divorcee. So the Gemara, that's that Gemara and Lama test, which we're probably going to do big time the next Chabura. Okay. Also, just beyond either or, there's obviously the potential to say that there are multiple tracks and multiple dinim involved when it comes to the Ishus Yibum question. First of all, the Netziv says that there are two tracks. He says this in both Dvarim and Kiseta and Ambratius. He has this idea that if you do it l'shem Yibum, you know, that's different than doing it l'shem Ishus. Okay? That the relationship can be colored by that. He says, even if you do it l'shem Yibum, you still require a get at the end. You wouldn't have Chalitza. But there is, according to the Netziv, two tracks. I brought this Malbim. The Malbim is really incredible.
Would there be practical ramifications of those tracks?
There may be. I think that's where Ksuba, Ona, Pirkona come into play.
Does the Netziv talk about that? About the halachic difference?
He doesn't really.
He just talks about there are two tracks. You can choose which one if you're willing to conquer your Teva HaGuf.
Right. Correct. So he doesn't get into the Nafgamina nitty gritty. There are halachic sources that do. The most famous is there's a Tosos Rid in Ksubos who says that a Yavam, after he marries his wife, Ksubos not Nunbez of an Aleph, I'll give it to you. I just can't hold back. The Tosos Rid in Ksubos on Nunbez of an Aleph says that if a Yavam and a Yavama get together and then she gets taken captive, he doesn't have to redeem her. He's not Chayv B'Pidyon or Birkuna, however you want to characterize it. Why? Because V'yima means that she's not considered his Isha. Sof kol sof, at the end of the day, she is only his Yivama.
That's strange because if you're asking what she is, so ukahalo liisha
bima
is a verb.
Correct. It's a very radical. It's based on a particular gears in that Gemara, and then he goes ahead and says this. But it's wild. Enough anami. It's wild, and that's way out there. But we'll see. We'll go through those sources a little bit more in depth. The Malbim basically says not necessarily two tracks like that, but two stages. That the Bia Rishona, the first time they get together, that's Bitoras Yibum. And that the child, a child born of that union, would be Mesiaches in whatever sense, after the brother who had passed away.
Only if the child is born of that Bia Rishona.
Correct.
That
but subsequently...
So the chances that Yibum actually ended up properly are slimmer than...
Also, you'd have to...
Right,
time,
now,
you
still fulfill that. The problem with the Malbim is you fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum with the first act of intercourse, whether or not it produces a child
right.
or not. Whether it produces a child
yeah,
or not.
So
correct.
So
well, Saris may be another issue, right? Saris might be a different issue, but we'll talk about it. So that Malbim is pretty wild. You could take a look at that we had here, and it's fairly radical. He's basing it on...
But he says that and subsequent videos would be different?
Right. He says everything afterwards.
That's a Malbim in Dvarim?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll take a look at that.
Could we read to the Rashi that I showed to you, where according to Zibimto, so the Reish Lakish says Bia is Eino Bia if she's in the Beres, even if the
right that.
So then Rashi says there that that first Bia is still does something.
Correct. There's where this gets really complicated is they also believed in during times more in the Rishonim that Bia Rishona, it was impossible to get impregnated from. So let's say the woman had never been, had never consummated her marriage with the brother, and then he dies.
Uh-huh.
And so then it would be physically impossible, in the view of Chazal and Rishonim, for them to have a child from that first act. So is the mitzvah really the second time they have Bia in that case, or do we say no?
What follows from that? Not that he can't.
Where that really comes up is in Chayvei Lavin. That's what I was going to get to. Where the Malbim.
I mean, nobody would say that you can't do Yibum because it's not intentional.
Right. Where they do say there is one case called Chayvei Lavin. Let's say there's an Isser Lav. Let's say there's an Isser Lav between the brother. And let's say he's
it's the brother's daughter.
Whatever lav you would come up with. Let's say she's I don't know, a grusha, some other.
Okay.
It would be hard. And how are they married in the first place?
Right.
So construct the case of Chayvei Lavin. So the Midoraisa we paskin with Chayvei Lavin, this is Machlokes Bavli Rishonim too, we paskin that Chayvei Lavin, Bia Rishona is Muteris, because there you can have the Asay of Yibum push aside the Lav, because it's a Lav She'en Bo Kares of the Chayvei Lavin that you're dealing with.
Okay.
But if you can't fulfill the mitzvah of Yibum because you can't have kids, how critical is having children to the mitzvah of Yibum? So the Malbim would seem to say it's fairly critical. Okay, so that Malbim, I think, is working off of that that issue of Yibum Mechayvei Lavin, how the Bia Rishona is really about Hakama Zera. And again, we've now thrown out different ideas about the nature of Yibum. We've talked this idea of the Chiyuv Mishpacha, or the Chesed of assisting Beis Achiv and the wife of the brother. And we've also talked about Hakama Zera, and we've also just... could throw out as another possibility the idea of just not leaving the Zika hanging and not necessarily related to the brother's marriage and not necessarily or helping out the brother or procreation, but really just about resolving the status of this woman, not leaving her in this limbo state. Maybe the function of Yibum and Chalitza as a combo. So there are a few different ways that we can explain the purpose of Yibum, all of which are illuminated by these discussions. also just a bunch of other two dinim, just to kind of make a list. There's a sugya called bia grua, you know, different biot which are done in not whether they're not complete bia or it was bal karcha. There are no das requirements for bias yibum, which is interesting in and of itself. But in that case, it's machlokes between Rav and Shmuel.
There's sort of das
Shema.
Right?
Is there only Shema aspect?
No.
But you do have to.
Yeah, Abishal says that if you don't have l'shem yibum, you're in big trouble. Right.
No, but not just Abishal. You have to have intention to have bia. Achlal. The guy who falls.
Well, it can't be misasik, right? You can't be misasik. It has to be a maisa bia. But that's more about defining the maisa than it is about.
I mean, oh, when right. Maisa bia.
Right.
There was no intention for bia.
Right. Right. There may, if it's completely misasik, it may be considered no maisa. But the Mishnah in the beginning of the sixth parak of Yivam talks about all kinds of cases where it's shalomi data or shalomi dato, and it's still chal. So the question there is, you know, do you have ishus in those cases? You have mitzvahs yibum because you had a sexual encounter, but maybe you don't have ishus because you're missing those elements of ishus, meaning those things which differentiate ishus from yibum may not. You may not be able to say, oh, you have ishus here too. Or maybe you say, no, even though you didn't have das or whatever it is, that's what's unique about yibum. We let that go. But at the end of the day, it's still one and the same. So that seems to be my discussion of Rav and Shmuel in the sixth parak, Bal Karcha versus Midata. Also, just a huge topic, which we're going to get to, it's more of a third parak topic, though, is Ma'amar, the whole institution. Like, if you want to talk about civilizing yibum, it's pretty clear that according to Beis Shammai, especially according to the Yerushalmi, the whole idea of Ma'amar was a kind of alternative to Bias Yibum. That instead of performing Yibum in kind of the ancient fashion of Bia, you had this alternative called Ma'amar where you gave Kesef, and it looks a whole lot like Kiddushin, in order to kind of create a parallel track. And the Yerushalmi in the beginning of the third and or the fourth parak talks about how you can either Yevami Yavo Aleha or Lekacha Lolisha Al Yedei Kiddushei Kesef Al Yedei Ma'amar. So we could get totally far afield on that, but again, that's a clear example of two dinim. Let's now just come back to the proto-Yibum cases. Okay? A little less than a half hour. The proto-Yibum cases in Tanakh and the relationship between them and to the mitzvah of Yibum. Okay, so certainly we have two possibilities, Yehuda and Tamar, and Rut and Boaz. They're different in the sense that Yehuda and Tamar predate Matan Torah, and that makes it certainly complicated, but also because post-Matan Torah, it's Asur, the relationship between Yehuda and Tamar is there's an Issa relationship, Kalaso, assuming that they were married. That's a whole other. Was she ever really married to Er and Onan, or was there Bishlo Kedarka, or was there no Ishus Kod Matan Torah? All those kinds of questions are dealt with and discussed in the Rishonim. So there's Yud and Tamar, and then there's Rus and Boaz, which is post Matan Torah. So that makes it slightly different than the Yud and Tamar case. And it's not a surah, but the phrase Yibum is not used. Yibum does appear in the Yehudan in the Tamar episode. The word does not appear in the Rut and Boaz relationship. There it's Geula. So you have Rishonim taking different views.
It does come up. He is referred to as a Yavam somewhere. Because I think so.
Is that true?
The only reason I remember that is because I was this last Yontif. I was
did
going
it?
Through it, and I said, oh, only mentioned Google. And then at some point, the Shorosh comes
well,
up.
Well, no, she says, Vatomer na mi, shovna benotai lama te lachni mi ha'ud li banim b'me'ai v'ayu lachem l'anashim, which, by the way, is problematic.
Because
even if she was pregnant, Naomi,
right.
They wouldn't be eligible for Yibum. Yeah, plus
so that's what he says. It wasn't.
That's Divrei Hayamim.
That's okay. Where who said one of the refers that you gave said that.
Right.
It was just a nice thing. I mean,
right.
Right.
A lot of Rishonim say these are just Melitzas Ba'alma. If we even use the word Yibum, we don't mean it. Or right. The Ibn Ezra is adamant. this is not Yibam. What happens in Rus is not at all Yibam. And others say different things. The Ramban really seems to think there are two dinim, that there's this idea of Geula and there's the idea of Yibam. And what is the relationship between those two things? Well, in a nutshell, what I think is going on is it's almost as if Yibam is Geula plus. Whatever idea of Geula there is, this idea of redeeming the brother or the mishpacha or whatever it is, you then add to that the element of Ishus, and then you come up with kind of the post Matan Torah version of what we call Yibum, that the Yibum elements are built on top of Geula. Now in Rus and Boaz, you have kind of a scenario where without the you don't have. It's not really Yibum. It's again just kind of pure Geula again, because it's just a relative as opposed to the brother itself. So there you have more of a pure. You have more of a different hybrid. There's still. It sounds like there is Ishus between Rus and Boaz, but the impulse for them to get together is not Yibum per se. It's more of the Geula, and then the act itself is kind of a conventional marital act, one would think. Okay. There's a ton of stuff a la Torah which I gave you to kind of look at. You know, the did Yehuda stay married to Shayla? You know, was there chalitza back then, right? Another critical piece here. There's no evidence that there was such a thing as chalitza during pre-Matan Torah. Right, that only comes up. That one of the questions is like, well, if Yehuda didn't think Shayla was right for ready yet for Tamar, or he thought she was a katlanis or whatever it is, why didn't they do chalitza? So I think the straightforward answer, some Rishonim argue on this, but the straightforward answer is that there wasn't yet chalitza. That chalitza is a Torah invention once we introduce the Ishus elements to the picture. Right, this is an important point. Once we now have that it's not just kind of this wild, wild west geula.
Paralleling the out clause for marriage.
Correct, just like you have gerushin. Now, again, chalitza and gerushin are not going to be exactly the same. There's still going to be some differences and maybe fundamental differences between them. But the institution or the innovation of chalitza is modeled after the preservation of, I like to look at Gershon as the preservation of the Ishus. By having this out clause, you have a way of preserving and protecting the Kedusha of the Ishus. Because if you have no way of getting out, and you have no way of being matir the Ishus, then the Ishus will crumble and you don't have anything.
What's the Kedusha of the Ishus?
Right. What'd you say?
It puts the Kedusha in Ishus.
Correct. And that's why that parsha is all about Kedushin, then Gerushin, and then Master Gushasa, because each one of those kind of highlights that element. So Chalitza may have been introduced into the picture once we have...
It's especially interesting because isn't the halacha in general if two brothers died and the third has to do Chalitza?
Based on Katlanis.
Yeah.
That's some of the discussion in the Rishonim, both on the Torah and in Yevamos. One of the Rishonim on the Torah says the reason why Yehuda didn't want to give Shayla Torah was because he was worried about Katlanis. Right.
I mean,
right.
That's what it seems like in the text in general.
That, or he wasn't yet old enough. Some people say.
Says that Kiyamar Penyim was gone home.
Right. That's true. Yeah. But because he's going to be mashchis zera like his brothers, and he's not ready to do it.
That's the next part.
Right, right. Yeah. Or because she's a killer, you know, that she's a black widow. Right, that's the definition of
Kabbalah. It could be that he was too young, and she wanted to make sure to wait till he's old enough.
He should do it,
so he doesn't die for not doing it.
What's also significant about the Yehuda and Tamar story is that she's still wearing her big day avelud. Seemingly many years later, like she takes them off to or
meaning that might signify that she was just stuck.
Stuck, correct. That's right. She's kind of in this horrible limbo without an out. Also, just this is I think a good thing that I haven't seen too many people talk about. In Divrei HaYamim, where it goes through all the generations of stuff, people don't point this out. So there's first discussion of Yehuda. I should have given this to you. I'm sorry I didn't. B'nei Yehuda, Peretz Chetzron. Sorry. Perek Bet has the family of Yehuda. Here we go. B'nei Yehuda, Ra B'nei. B'nei Yehuda, Erva Onan V'Sheila. Shloshino Lad Lomi Bashua Knanit. Right, that's one question. Like, what was the relationship between Yehuda and the Knanis? Was that real marriage? That's a separate thing. But he heir b'chor Yehuda rabbe ne'ashem v'yemiseo v'tamar kalaso yalda lo es peretz v'ezarach kol b'nei Yehuda chamisha. Okay, then it goes through the rest of Peretz and Zerach's kids. Then in Divrei Yom Aleph, Perek Dalet Pasuk Chaf Aleph, we're finally introduced to Sheila. Right, remember, Sheila was the third child. The first two died. The latter two are more important because they lead to David.
Wait, that part you just quoted doesn't mention Onan?
No, it's also weird. It just mentions Er, Ra, Vene, Hashem. And then it says V'tamar Kalaso, but yeah, it's weird. But then it later on mentions B'nei Sheila Ben Yehuda, Er, Avilecha.
That's
the name? The main point is his name was Er.
Right. That was his Hakamah's shame.
Right. So my question is this. Who was Shayla's wife? Who was Shayla's wife? Did Shayla marry Tamar after... If you take the view, and this is a machlokas in Chazal, if you take the view that Yehuda no longer...
Yasav.
Right. What that means he never...
He didn't stop or he didn't continue.
If you take the view that he didn't continue... Did Shayla at a certain point, did Yehuda say, oh, okay, so Shayla, now it's time and have a kid and name him heir? Or is this some random wife that, it's just striking that the name of Shayla's child is heir? A, was Tamar the wife? And if Tamar was the wife, was this Yibum, was this the literal Vahayah HaBechor Asher Teleid, Yakum Al Shem Achiv, Shemait, which is interpreted by Chazal as to not mean literally, it means mitzvah begadol yabim, etc. So, I don't know, I just thought that was a cool thing to throw out there. So, a number of questions pertain to the psukim about Yud and Tamar. Did real Ishus exist before Matan Torah? Does Yibum exist outside of formal Ishus? Are they performing Yibum? So, My own take, and again, there are various views in the Rishonim on this, the Ibn Ezra, the Ramban, and others, is that pre-Matan Torah, there is this universal notion of, or Minhag Kadmonim, the Radak says, other Rishonim formulate different ways, there is this universal notion of a family preserving, and there are more negative ways to say that too, like that they own the woman and they... You know, they're in other cultures it may have been different. There's a
Hammurabi's code.
Right. There's a book. I have the book at home. There's a book written by a woman who spent a lot of time on Yibam and Chalitza and ancient Near East and that kind of stuff, where she has all. Yeah.
I found there's another book, History of Human Marriage. It's a bunch of three sets, and it shows that it's all over.
Right. So there clearly was something going on. The question is whether that something was the same in kind of the Hebrew culture, or if even in the Hebrew culture they already had a slightly different twist.
Slightly different to the opposite. Chesed.
Right, correct. Not right. If you take the view that it was about that she belonged to them and she's chattel and they can't let her go, as opposed to this saying you have to take care of your brother and you have to take care of his family, etc. And then you add in Matan Torah the Ishus, post-Matan Torah, the Ishus element. You go from pure Geula to a combo Geula and Ishus.
And also limiting to the brother, which makes him more, you know, free, so to speak.
Right, right. Limiting to the brother, adding in Chalitza, which I think ties in with some of the Ishus stuff, giving it in and out. And again, there's Lekula and Lechumra. Lechumra, just to throw this out there, there's a whole discussion in the Rishonim, like, why is Tamar Chai of Sreifa if she had, like, Lehalacha, that's just a lav, right? She is Zekuka Liyibam, right? She should marry Shayla.
Here's a Kanoi.
Okay, so you could say, and again, this ties in with Ben Sora Mora stuff. Some people say that, like, Ben Sora Mora is actually a dialing back of the patriarchal authority, that the patriarch in pre-Matan Torah, they were able to just decide, okay, we're going to kill this person who belongs to our household. Yehuda says, kill Tamar. Yaakov says, I'll kill whoever stole the trafit. And that's not just a melitza ba'alma. Some people say you take that very seriously. The patriarchal figure has authority over the whole household. And then Ben Sora Mora is actually a dialing back because it has to be the father and the mother agreeing and he has to do certain things. Okay, that's a whole other discussion. Some people say that she was considered a bas kohen because Yehuda was a leader. You know, that's Tosos and Sanhedrin. But it could be, and some Rishonim say this, I forget who says it all the time, that Kodem Matan Torah, it's more of a, again, a more of a rudimentary kind of raw scenario. It's like Dinei B'nei Noach, where you always get killed no matter what. So there aren't these fine distinctions between Zekuka Liyibim and Eishes Ish. She was considered an Eishes Ish because she was supposed to marry the brother. There was no chalitza. There was no way out. It was that's a not a quasi Eishes Ish. That's a real Eishes Ish. So again, that would be a kula post Matan Torah. We would say that there's a kula in that the nature of Zika has now changed. That post Matan Torah, you have the combo Geula and Ishus, and that also may affect the question of who more people, as opposed to just the brother-in-law, the father-in-law, the other relatives, and even the question of Hutcher Dehuya and Me'olam Lo Nemra. It may have been that Kodem Matan Torah was just Dehuya, and then post Matan Torah, you now get into more Hutra and Lo Nemra because it's built into kind of the
what do you mean by I know it comes up a lot Hutra and Dehuya when it comes to Yibam.
Maybe the nature of the pushing aside of the prohibition. There were Gilui Arayot for Bnei Noach as well. Right. Meaning Eshazach is only Dehuya, but post Matan Torah, even the Isser Eshazach may be transformed. That's a whole discussion in the Gemara in Daf Hey, Amid Beis, and I gave you some Rishonim on that, and there's also a discussion of Rishonim in Tzadi Ches and Tzadi Tes. Okay, let me just wrap up with a couple of more Ha'aros on the Ala Torah stuff, and then on the order of the Mishnayos. We're not going to get to the Minyan HaMitzvos, so I'll either give you that some other time, or we'll leave it for now. Okay, so I also think, and again, getting to this idea that this is about kind of selfless giving of oneself to one's family to preserve, you know, the name of the family or the name of the brother, etc. All those different iterations of that same idea, I think you even see another precursor to it, a more perverted one in the relationship or the impulse or the motivation of the daughters of Lot with, I forgot to give you this, there's an awesome Hakdama in one of the Chalakim of Rav Moshe Feinstein, where in the Igros Moshe, where he says that he once had a guy come to him to tell him that he had a dream that he had been giving a Dvar Torah Friday night of Parshas Vayera, and he said, you know, how terrible is it that Rus and David came from, you know, these horrible women who named their child after, so blatantly after their father, Ammon and Moab. They're horrible. And that night in a dream, two elderly ladies who were dressed very tsanua, this is in Igros Moshe, came to him, this guy in a dream, and told him, you know, you're going to get very sick, but you're going to have a, you know, problem with your mouth because you spoke Lashon Hara against us. This is in that was my riot. It's not just the Yavoni of whatever it is. I don't remember exactly what he says. And the guy tells her most of the story and then dies. It's crazy. So to me, what struck me about that is that, again, Lot, and this is a larger picture, Tanakh point of Lot. Lot is this descendant of Avram who's lived in the house of Avram, but he then goes to stone and completely messes up his family by doing so, and everyone gets messed up by it, and they have this perverted version of chesed, and right, that's also the vart that sometimes arayos are called chesed, right? Because
no,
if you go,
brother,
if you,
brother, sister.
Right, if you go so far to be a baal chesed to the orchim, you end up giving, you know, per, you
that's
know,
what kedushah is.
Right. So the but the impulse, the point that I was trying to make is the impulse of the daughters of Lot, and what ultimately becomes redeemable in what they do. And the reason why Rus comes from them and Dovid HaMelech eventually comes from them is that their act of erva is redeemed. Their act of overly, you know, chesed without any limits is redeemed later on.
That's the Dor HaMabul downfall, the chesed to the extreme. So I think that's what they talk about there.
I thought they were chamsanim. They weren't chesed.
Well, that was.
That's the Dor HaPalaga.
No. The Gemara says that Hakadosh Baruch Hu said, "Oh, because you were chamsanim, there, that's why I'm going to kill you." What about Arias and everything that they were doing before that?
Oh, so he says that wasn't so bad.
He's saying that wouldn't have been so bad because they could have tied a chesed.
Gotcha.
The fact that they were chamsanim.
Correct. Nachon. So I think that there's a grammatical proof to this. I saw this. I think one of the modern biblical scholars points out how the only two times you have this combination of ba, alav, or aleha is in the case of the psukim yavama yavo aleha and ish im ba'aretz lavo aleinu. And normally it should be lavo eleinu. So that indicates that either the parsha of Yibam tells us retroactively, you know, intertextually, that what they were doing was this impulse of Yibam, or the other way, that it basically says that their idea was Yibam in the first place. Either way, I think it's not a coincidence that both Yehuda and Tamar and Lot and his daughters eventually comes together through the union of Rut and Boaz, the descendant of Moab and the descendant of Yehuda and Tamar. Peretz ends up forming this union. So why? But there isn't a why there. What's the why? So I think the why is, I think this is a beautiful idea, that Malchus, and the danger of Malchut, is that the king who is treated with such special privileges will end up thinking that, you know, and we see that many kings fell victim to that, maybe even David himself, and certainly Shlomo, that they think that the rules don't apply to them, that they're special, that they're, you know, more important than anyone else, that they're entitled more than anyone else. So the best way to combat that is to select the king from people who act in selfless manner, who you know, build in hopefully through their actions and maybe through the family, you know, DNA, this idea, this impulse to selflessly give of themselves. So the daughters of Lot is slightly messed up and perverted, and we see that their chesed is out of whack, and Amon and Moav later on demonstrate that their chesed is completely out of whack when they don't give the kadim. And that's why that scene at the doorway is so important in stone. Like, Lot's house is this cocoon where it can be like Avram's tent. And the doorway, and outside the doorway is stone, and they eventually break through the door because the outside eventually breaks, and, you know, it's kind of slightly Haredi message, but you know, stone is much worse than anything else. And right, that's also, I've given a share on, you know, the connection between Pesach and stone, right? Pesach, there are all kinds of connections. That's matzah. Why are they eating matzah? It's not random. The whole point is that scene there parallels the scene of Bnei Yisrael putting the blood on their doorpost and saying, even though it's crazy what's going on outside, the homes of the Bnei Yisrael are intact. So, how do you combat the natural obstacle and the potential pitfall of kingship and kochi votam yadi, or whatever you want to say, bishvili nivra olam? You find a family that has, throughout its generations and lines, this idea of selflessness and yibum and mishpacha, the geula of that we see in.
I have a marmakum for you. Another marmakum by for humbling the king the Gemara Bracha says that by the bowing, so it says that regular Jews bow, you know, a certain amount of times, Kohanim a little bit more, and kings have to stay bowing the entire time. So the more it is, the greater the temptation to pride.
Right.
So that's the more a person has to be.
Correct.
Able.
So kind of the inoculator or the preemptive guarantee of this is that you find the family that comprised of all these unions, which are so selfless, especially Rus and Boaz. Each one of them is doing this for the other. Boaz is doing it for Naomi. Rus is doing it for Boaz and Naomi. And kind of the other ironic thing is that Ploni Almoni is worried about his shame, and he loses his shame. Right? He's literally nameless. You know, Joe Schmo. And the people who end up getting the glory and the shame are the people who are not interested in their own shame. One other piece to this, Adam.
I like the structure and methodology of that idea, but I think the content should be a little bit different. I think that the idea of Malchus coming from these relationships should be that Malchus, the challenge of Malchus is, it is being in a culture of another, but I think it's more losing sight of familial connections and being more of a national leader.
Right.
And this is teaching them like that, no, it has to be all in the family.
Good. I like that too, that it all starts kind of with the...
That's why there's an issue of Harbin Nashim.
Right. Okay. Yarbalo Susim. Right. Okay. I think there's one other more radical extension of the proto-Yibums. I think I might have mentioned this to Adam, but I'll try it out on you guys. You let me know what you think. One of the enduring mysteries of the Torah and of the Jewish faith and of the Jewish people, not to make this too big a deal, is Avraham's selection. Right? Avraham appears on the scene, Lechecha me'artzecha, u'mimolatcha beit avicha, el haaretz asher ereka. So there are different midrashic views about who Avraham was and where he came to be selected and how did he hear God? Was he 40 years old, 48 years old? Was he 3 years old? There are all kinds of different midrashic views, and those are really important because they emphasize, and the fact that it's left ambiguous might be important because it emphasizes like there's no one true path to finding spirituality and to finding God and to finding monotheism. There's emotional, there's the intellectual, rational, there's the combination of both. You have to be everything. You have to be start somewhere and then put it all together. Big believer in that. I think that that's all very interesting and fascinating. But it did occur to me a number of years ago, shortly after I learned Yibamos the first time, that that's not necessarily the only way to understand the selection of Avraham. And yes, in terms of finding God, that does seem to be... There's no indication of where Avraham found God, other than that he heard, right? There's a famous word. God said, Lechcha, everybody, and Avraham's the only one who heard. Okay, leaving aside that. There are psukim which talk about Avraham. It seems like they're innocuous, kind of insignificant or less significant psukim. But there are a few psukim in the end of Parshas Noach which talk about, right after the Dor HaPalaga, which talk about Avraham. If you take a look on the second page, on the back of the page. Right, and the contrast here with the Dor HaPalaga is very important. It's only after the Dor HaFlaga, I can't say Palaga more than three times. It's only after the Dor HaFlaga that God scraps the plan, right? The original plan was for all of mankind to embrace ethical monotheism and to be nice to each other, etc. We fail with Adam and Chava, we fail with Cain and Hevel, we fail with the Dor HaMabul, fail again with Dor HaFlaga. They're too unified, they want to make a name for themselves. God disperses them, the names. Okay. Right after that, we're introduced to Avram. Okay, and his family. Okay, we're also told Vayikach Avram v'Nachor lahem nashim, pasuk chavtas. Shame Eshes Avram Sarai, the shame Eshes Nachor Milka, Bas Haran Avi Milka va'Avi Yiska. Okay, Vati Sarai Akara ein lavlad. And there's a Chazal that Sarai didn't even have a base rechem. It's Gemara Yevamos. I feel base rechem. Like she physiologically could not have a child. And I think that's also interesting. So what do these psukim have to do at all with Avram, and how does this indicate the selection of Avram? So according to Chazal, and it's based on a careful reading of the pasuk, who were the two wives of Avram and Achor? Sarai, and we have to finish up, and Milcah were both daughters of Haran, meaning Sarai is Yiska. Right? Right? That's the Midrash view. So what's significant? Who is Haran? So we read in the pasuk beforehand, by Yamas Haran al Pnei Terech Aviv Be'eretz Moab Tabor Kasdim. Haran died early. He had kids and then he died. Okay? How did he die? That's the whole Ur Kasdim, right? Okay. Check this out. Vayikach Avram v'Nachor lehem nashim. What's strange about the verb vayikach there? Right? Should be vayichu. Right? We have one similar example of that earlier on in Parshas Noach. Right? Vayikach Shem v'Yefes. Right? And what does Rashi say on that?
He was more zaris.
Right? Shem was the one whose idea it was. Right? So just applying that same methodology here. And this is a little farty, I'll agree with you. Vayikach Avram and Achor, what?
Hazano had to make that judgment. They didn't.
Okay, or it's the same, apply the same thing here, right? So Vayikach Avram and Achor, they take two sisters, they take their two first cousins, sorry, their two nieces. Avram and Nachor take their two nieces, the daughters of Haran, as their wives. But whose idea is it really? Avram, because it's Vayikach Avram, Vinachor also does this. What's significant about that? So again, this is not Yibum, but what's the impulse here of Avram? Avram says, my brother Haran died, I gotta take care of his family. Why does Avram, we read, Haran dies, Avram marries, and Nachor marries, they marry the two children from the family of Haran. So Avram says, I got to take care of my family. I got to take care of my brother. Now, if you take the Midrash view that she couldn't conceive, then it's even more remarkable. Avram kind of gives up on his own future selflessly to take care of Sarai. Again, we could talk some more about that. We might be getting too far afield. So again, why is Avram chosen? It's all potentially embedded in these psukim. Avram's chosen because, like the kings, he's... What's the danger in choosing a specific family? Well, we see it. You end up writing books like... what's that book? Torah Samelach?
Yeah.
Right? You end up writing books where you say that we're the only people who are important and everybody else is insignificant. Avram is built in to his worldview that he's not going to be like that. Avram is going to care about others and be selfless, etc. And what ends up happening, it's the same thing as with the kingship. Avram ends up being the man, he ends up being the one whose family becomes the family, and his shame ends up spreading, Av Hamon Goyim, etc. Okay, last point, the order of Yevamos and Kiddushin. So there are a couple of technical explanations for it, but I really like this idea that the idea of geula and chesed, those little acts of chesed, are, and it's also just a very nice way to talk about selection of Judaism. It's not just about finding God and ethical monotheism, etc., and discovering God emotionally or intellectually, but it's also about Avram, who he was. Ki yidativ l'man asher yitzaveh es banav es beiso acharav laso tzedek mishpat. How does God know that? He sees the way Avram acts with his family. Order of Mishnayos. The Tosafot Yeshanim says it's because Tamar and Yehuda, and the first mitzvah of Ishus in the Torah is Yibum. That's very important for whether or not the Yibum of Tamar and Yehuda is something. Right? That's one of the answers of Tosafot Yeshanim. He also quotes the other answer of Tosafot in Moed Katan, which is that Moed Katan leads to Yevamos. Moed Katan deals with Avelus, then we go right into Yevamos. Okay. What I would want to suggest...
Why is Yibum first? What about...
The whole point is, why is Yevamos before Kiddushin? So one of the answers that the Bali Tosfos give is because we just finished talking about Avelus, so it's natural to then talk about a scenario of Yevamos. He says chronologically, the Mishnah follows the chronological order of the Torah. Ishus comes after the story of Yehuda and Tamar, the Parsha.
Oh,
he doesn't necessarily think that that's Kiddushin, right? Yehud and Tamar is Yibum, and that comes before him. Okay? But I think you could say much more fundamentally, like we said in the beginning, that Yibum and Yevamos highlight important elements of Ishus and the Jewish family. Whether it's the importance of Pruvu, or the importance of our duties to others, or it's the idea that Rav Kook has about Chasinut, about sustaining, and that tragedy sometimes illuminates even more than everything else, which I take to mean also kind of combination of what I've been saying, which is that the scenario of Yibum highlights the idea of Chesed and Mesirut Nefesh, which should be at the core of all marriages, and that this Yevamon is actually a way of highlighting some of these characteristics of what should be at the core of every Jewish marriage. So that in a certain sense, having Yevamon before Kiddushin, whether it's for technical reasons or I prefer the more fundamental reasons, gives us a better sense of what Nashim, what Seder Nashim, and what true Ishus is supposed to be about. It's not just about the formal Kinyan and Kedusha elements, which are there, but it's also about these the Chesed and the Mesirut Nefesh elements as well. Go ahead. All right, we got a lot done.
Yes.
Yeah.